We read in chapter 11 of Joshua, verse 23. So Joshua took the whole land, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel according to their divisions of their tribes. You know, earlier God had, in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1, God had promised Moses that Joshua would give Israel the title to the land. And he said, Joshua, the son of Nun, that stands before you, he will go there. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit the land. He'll inherit it. So Joshua conquering the land, giving the people, also reminds us of a greater Joshua. His name we call in the Greek, Yeshua, or Yeshu, and that's Jesus the Christ. He conquered at Calvary, and he gave gifts to men. He was the one who gave apostles, prophets, pastors, pastors and teachers. By the way, that is a phrase that means pastors and teachers are the same thing, pastors and teachers. And he gave us an inheritance. Joshua's going to give them an inheritance. What's our inheritance? Peter, 1 Peter 1, verse 4 says, it's an inheritance incorruptible, undefiled, that does not fade away, reserved for you in heaven. So Joshua, and I'm not trying to demean Joshua's thing, so we're going to come back to the original Joshua here. He did a great job. Now, we begin chapter 13. We're going to go all the way through chapter 21. I'm just going to summarize things because most of it is telling you the territory and who got what. But Joshua's main job now, he switches, right? His main job switches from conqueror to administrator, to the person who's now trying to solve the problems, dealing with people, administering this and causing the people to inherit the land. When the people went in, not all of them sprung to life and sprung to action to take care of the land. Not all of them did this. For instance, in Joshua chapter 18, we see people who kind of just postponed doing it. And you see in Joshua 18, verse 3, so Joshua said to the sons of Israel, how long will you put off entering to take the possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you? Now, here's the territory. We drove out most of the people. You might have a few stragglers in the tribes, but how long will you know? This is your territory. Go in and take it. And they just postponed taking it. He says, provide for yourselves three men from each tribe. This is Joshua 18, verse 4. Provide for yourself three men from each tribe that I may send them and that they may arise and walk through the land and write a description of it according to the inheritance, and then they shall return to me. So he wanted them to go in, get a description of the land, come back, bring it to me. Now we enter chapter 13. I want to start chapter 13 here in verse 1. It's kind of a nostalgic sort of thing, sort of sad. Now Joshua was old. You remember that phrase? David was old and stricken in age. That's the King James phrase. Now it really means Joshua was old and advanced in years. When the Lord said to him, and here's what the Lord said to him, you are old and advanced in years, and very much of the land remains to be possessed. It doesn't remain to be conquered, but it remains to be possessed. This is the land that remains, all the regions of the Philistines and all those of the Geshurites, and from Shiloh, which is east of Egypt, even as far as the border of Ekron and the north, is counted as Canaanites. You know, the five lords of the Philistines, the Gazites, Ashdods, and so on, Ashkelon, and Gittite, Necronite, and the Ivite to the south, and all the land of the Canaanites. This is all yet to be possessed. You know, you pretty much conquered everybody, but you ought to go and possess it. that belongs all the way to the Sidonians, to the border there, and for the Amorite and the land of the Gibeites, and all the land of Lebanon toward the east, from Baal Gad, from Mount Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath. All the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon as far as all the way to the Zidonians, I will drive them out from before the sons of Israel, only allotted to the Israel for an inheritance as I have commanded you. Now therefore apportion this land for an inheritance to the nine tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh. Now, God was not, by the way, just insulting Joshua. You're old. You know, what he's saying is, you know, you're getting advanced in age, and you got to get this work done. There is work for you still to do. You need to go in and do this work. And, you know, just because you're advanced in age, this doesn't mean you don't work. It doesn't mean you don't accomplish. It doesn't mean you can't get things done. I know in our society, a person gets this 65. I know all kinds of people younger than Core. younger than me, younger than Sherwin, younger than Mariana, and so on, and younger than Bessie, even younger than Harold. I know a lot of people who are younger, and you know what they do? I want to retire. I'm tired. Okay, I understand that. I want to retire and all that. But, you know, there's still stuff for us to do. Even when you're retired from your regular job, there's still stuff. You know, you look how hard Lewis works. He's retired, but he works hard. He's always working, doing something. So we got a lot of things that have done. So he's telling Joshua, you know, I know you're old. This was to inspire Joshua to get busy for the completion of the conquest of Canaan. The land of Canaan, that's where they went. And so, you know, They have to keep going. And, you know, there's a psalm in Psalm 90, verse 12. And we need to kind of take this to heart. It says, teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Teach us to number our days. How old are we? How much time do we have left that we may apply our hearts to thinking, what is our legacy? What are we doing in this life? What's the thing we want to accomplish? What's the thing we still have? And I know people talk about bucket lists and all that. But this is what he said. Now, Joshua probably, because we read in chapter, 14, that Caleb said, I'm in my 80s. I'm 85. So I think at this time when God said this to Joshua, I think he was a little older than Caleb. And, you know, he was with Moses very early. And so I think he was probably in his 90s. He lived to be 110 years old, if you read Joshua 24, verse 29. He lived to be 110, and then he died. So he's now being told, a guy in his 90s, you're getting old. You're getting up there. You got to get this done. I'm not telling you you're old to insult you. I'm telling you you're old. You don't have that many more years to get done what you wanted to get done. You know, I know people that they see no purpose in life. They have no purposes. Their life means nothing. One person said, "Well, what good is life if you die? Everybody dies. So what good is life?" Well, you have to have a purpose for your life. You're leaving a purpose. You're doing something. And you have to have a purpose in what you're doing. So this is a lesson. We have to keep going. In Psalm 92, beginning in verse 12, it says this. The righteous man will flourish like the palm tree. He will grow like the cedar of Lebanon. Planted in the house of the Lord, they will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still yield fruit in old age. They shall be full of sap and very green. They're still green. They'll still yield fruit if you're in God's possession, in God's way. You'll still yield fruit. Now, during this time of the, I just got to summarize some of these chapters for you. During this time, He's portioning. You remember, he's going to give this. He's going to get some certain amount of Manasseh, certain of this. And you remember that the daughters of Zelophehad, remember him? Back in the book of Numbers, they come up to Moses and they say, hey, our father died in these wars. He had no sons. Why should our father not have an inheritance here? Why should our father be left out of the inheritance and out of the genealogy? And they demanded. And so Moses went to God. You know, this is anthropomorphic stuff. It's like God doesn't know it. But and God said, the daughters of Zelophehad, this is Numbers 27 and verse 6, are right in their statements. You know, that if a man doesn't have any sons, the inheritance should go to his daughters. It shouldn't just go to just anybody. It shouldn't just be left out. Why should the name of our father be withdrawn from among the family because he had no sons? It's not his fault. He had no sons. So in the time of Joshua, they came again. Chapter 17 of Joshua, dropping down to verse 3. However, Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, he was a Manassite, had no sons, only daughters. And these are the names of the daughters. And you all read the rest of verse 3. Then they came near to Eleazar the priest and Joshua and said, the Lord commanded Moses to give us the inheritance among our brothers. You know, among other people, among our other Manassites. Give us an inheritance. And there fell 10 portions to Manasseh besides the land of Gilead, and so on and so on. So the daughters, because the daughters of Manasseh received an inheritance among the sons. So the daughters get an inheritance among the sons based on what they asked. Now, you would think everybody's getting land, they're getting land, this is going, you know, and land is what you have to have. You can't be prosperous without land. You have to grow things, you have to build things, you have to have things, you have to have land. So here was the tribe of Joseph. Of all the tribes, Joseph's tribe was the biggest, the most populous. They had the tribe of Manasseh, was so big it had divided into two tribes, half tribe. One tribe, one part got here, another part, and then Ephraim. Ephraim got an inheritance, half tribe of Manasseh here, and another tribe part here. But they still complain. Listen to this now. You come all the way to Joshua chapter 17. Let's drop down to verse 14. Now, this is a very uncommon thing among the, you know, you're getting this, Gad, you have this part. Okay, Naphtali, you have this area. Okay, oh, thank you. You know, everybody's happy, always happy. Listen to what happens to Joseph's kids. Joshua chapter 17, dropping down to verse 14. Then the sons of Joseph spoke to Joshua, saying, why have you given me only one and one portion for an inheritance, since I am numerous? You know, I am a numerous people whom the Lord has thus far blessed. Why have you only given me? Joshua said to them, if you are a numerous people, then go up to the forest and clear a place for yourself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the Rephaim. Since the hill country of Ephraim is too narrow for you, the sons of Joseph said, the hill country is not enough for us. And all the Canaanites who live in the valley and have the chariots of iron, both those who are in the Beth Shean and its towns, those who are in the valley of Jezreel. Joshua spoke to the house of Joseph, to Ephraim, to Manasseh, saying, you are a numerous people and have a great power. You shall not have one lot only, but the hill country shall be yours. For though it is a forest, you shall clear it, and in its furthest border it shall be yours, and for you to drive out the Canaanites, even though they have chariots of iron and they are strong. And though they are strong, you could drive them out. And I want you to go up there and stop griping and get to it. Now, the children of Joseph comprised two tribes of Manasseh. Remember, the half tribe of Manasseh and Ephraim. That's like three tribes. They got inheritance. But they complained. they had only one lot. And the truth is, they had more than that. The children of Joseph were given at least three lots already. Manasseh had a lot on the east side of Jordan. You'll see in chapter 13, 14, verse 14. Another one on the west side of Jordan, verse 17. And Ephraim had a lot west of Jordan, verse 16. So they had lots, but I don't like this hill country. I don't like this part. I got to do a lot of work to clear this. I don't like this. I want more. Now this bunch of Joseph's kids, Ephraim and Manasseh, were a problem. They were a problem in Israel following. They were a problem during the judges' time. Did you know that? Watch this. Look at Judges chapter 8. This is the time of Gideon, I believe. And Gideon is fighting. Now, Gideon himself is a Manassite. But the men of Ephraim, here's Joseph's kids. You got Manasseh here. You got Ephraim. You got two tribes. And the men of Ephraim said to him, "What is this thing you have done to us? To us? Not calling us when you went to fight against Midian." You'd say, well, we beat them, we beat them. Why didn't you call us? Okay? And they contended with him vigorously, argued with him, fought with him. How come you didn't call us? You had to call us. We're entitled to. But he said, well, what have I done now in comparison with you? What have I done? Now, listen to how he flatters them, kind of. Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the entire vintage of Abiezer? God has given the leaders of Midian, Orb and Zeb, into your hands. And what was I able to do in comparison to you? You guys, you did all kinds of good things. Just that we defeated Midian, don't get all upset. Then their anger toward him was subsided when he said that. He flattered them, you guys are so great, you're so superior. But in the time now of Jephthah, you remember Jephthah was one of the judges? Okay, so in chapter 12 of Judges, in Jephthah's time, the men of Ephraim were summoned, and they crossed Zaphon and said to Jephthah, "Why did you cross over to fight against the sons of Ammon without calling us to go with you?" It's like, we have a right to, we're going to be there, we have a right to be there, we want to be in on it. "We will burn your house down on you." We didn't call you to fight. We handled it. Well, what gives you the right to tell everybody what we're supposed to do? "We'll burn your house down on you." Ammon, Jephthah, and then Jephthah said to them, "Look, I and my people were a great strife with the sons of Ammon when I called you. And you did not deliver me from their hand. When I saw that you would not deliver me, I took my life in my hands and crossed over against the sons of Ammon, and the Lord gave them into my hand. Why then have you come to me to this day to fight against me? Why are you all upset for everything?" Then Jephthah gathered all the men of Gilead and fought Ephraim. Now they had to, here it's like in a civil war. And the men of Gilead defeated Ephraim because they said, "You are fugitives of Ephraim, O Gileadites, in the midst of Ephraim and the midst of Manasseh." The Gileadites captured the fords of Jordan opposite Ephraim. And it happened that when any fugitive of Ephraim was there and they said, "Let me cross over," the Ephraimites had a speech impediment. They couldn't say this particular word. They couldn't say shibboleth. They couldn't say that word. When they tried to, they lithed. So say shibboleth. They would say sibboleth. And they couldn't say it. They'd say, you're an Ephraimite. Get him. And they would take care of him. He would not let him cross over. So they seized him and they slew at the fords of Jordan. Thus there fell at that time 42,000 from Ephraim. They get all upset. "Why didn't you call us?" "Well, we're mad. We're going to burn your house down. We're going to do this deal." They lost 42,000 men. They were troublemakers. Why were these Ephraimites so problematic sons of Joseph. Here's in Joshua chapter 19. This is very interesting because here it shows a little bit of Joshua's character. Joshua 19, verse 49. When they had made an end of dividing the land for inheritance by their coasts and borders, the children of Israel, after they had divided everything, everybody's got their inheritance, the children of Israel gave an inheritance to Joshua, the son of Nun, among them. According to the word of the Eternal, they gave him the city which he asked, even Timnath-Serah in Mount Ephraim. He wanted to go. You know that Joshua was an Ephraimite, right? You know he was from the tribe. And he built the city there and dwelt therein. After everybody got their inheritance, Joshua gets his. So here we see. And they did it basically according to the word of the Eternal. Let me read that from the New American Standard. When they had finished apportioning the land for an inheritance by its borders, the sons of Israel gave an inheritance in their midst. This is Joshua 19, verse 49 and 50. They gave an inheritance in their midst to Joshua, the son of Nun. In accordance with the command of the Lord, the Eternal, they gave him the city which he had asked for, Timnath-Serah, in the hill country of Ephraim, and he built the city and settled there. Now, that's where he was. Now, the tribes were supposed to, when they got their inheritance, there were still remnants. There was not a big army anymore. They had conquered the big armies. They had conquered the kings of these cities. But there were remnants of people and resistances, you know, like guerrilla groups. You're supposed to go in, clean that out, take that territory, drive out those people. That's what they were supposed to do. You got little guerrilla groups there. Get rid of them. But they seemed to be delinquent in this duty. They just couldn't seem to get it done. And if you read these scriptures, we could probably pick out three or four reasons why they couldn't get it done. So let's take a look at it. In Joshua chapter 15, verse 63, now as for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the sons of Judah, this is Joshua 15, verse 63, Joshua 15, the sons of Judah could not drive them out. Now, the Jebusites are still there. Now, their king, you know, who was the king of Jerusalem? Adonizedek, you remember? Adonizedek was, but they couldn't drive out the rest of these Jebusites who lived in around there. They couldn't do it. They had little skirmishes and different people there. They couldn't do it. They could not. Now, the word could not means you don't have enough power. You don't have enough strength. You could try, but you can't do it. So the Jebusites live with the sons of Judah at Jerusalem till this day, said the report from here in Joshua chapter 15, verse 63. And in chapter 17, verse 12, listen to this. But the sons of Manasseh could not take possession of these cities. He's talking about cities that Manasseh could have taken. They couldn't do it, because the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. They couldn't do it. Now, you're not going to. Well, what's that mean? They were too weak. They were too weak. They did not have enough firepower. They did not have enough army. They did not have enough gumption. They didn't have the strength to drive them out. When you say you can't do it, what does that mean? I'm trying to do it and I can't do it. It means that you don't have enough power. You don't have enough strength. So the first thing then is weakness. Some of the Israelites were too weak. Their army was too weak. Their soldiers were too weak to drive them out. So that says they could not. Then you have this statement in the book of Joshua chapter 16, verse 10. Now, this does not say could not. Joshua 16, verse 10. But they did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. They did not. Did not means they just didn't do it. Could have. Didn't say could not. Said they did not. And here's the reason. Listen to the reason. So the Canaanites live in the midst of Ephraim. This is back in Ephraim. To this day. And they became forced laborers. Oh, well, we didn't drive them out. We just thought we could make them slaves, forced labor. We'll take them over. They'll be our laborers. They'll have to do what we tell them to do. They have to do our bidding. They have to do our work. Not good. See, they could have, but they didn't. They compromised their position. It was a compromise. In chapter 17 and verse 13 of Joshua, it came about when the sons of Israel became strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out. They didn't want to drive them out. They could have, but they didn't do it. They wanted to force them. We're going to make slaves of them, make them work for us. They don't have any choice. We conquer them, we're going to make slaves of them. Slackness. Slackness is another thing. Joshua pointed out to the cause of what they did. Joshua said this. This is in chapter 18, verse 3. So Joshua said to the sons of Israel, how long will you put off taking it? How long will you put off getting in there and doing the thing and actually taking the inheritance? How long? So they're just slack. They're just slack. And then we have the fact that when the major tribes didn't drive out all the people, when they didn't do it, that the smaller tribes didn't do it. So that's bad, bad examples. Okay? So you have the principal tribes who demonstrated their delinquency. The Judah was delinquent in driving out people of their land. Ephraim was delinquent. Manasseh was likewise delinquent. You'll see that in chapter 17 for Manasseh, chapter 15 for Judah, chapter 16 for Ephraim. So when the principal tribes didn't do the thing and they didn't finish the work, then what? Well, then the rest of them say, well, okay, they let it go. They're the big tribes. They're the big, strong. They got the volume. They got the power. They got the manpower. And they didn't do it. Now, at the end of his life, Joshua did some counseling. He counseled with these people. Here you have in chapter 22. Chapter 22, beginning in verse 1. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh, and said to them, you have kept all that Moses, a servant of the Lord, commanded. You have listened to my voice and all that I commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days to this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers as he spoke to them. Therefore turn now and go to your tents, to the land of your possession, which Moses the servant of the Eternal gave you beyond Jordan. Only be very careful to observe the commandment and the law which Moses the servant of the Eternal commanded you, to love the Eternal your God and walk in all his ways and keep his commandments and hold fast to him and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. So Joshua blessed them, sent them away, and they went to their tents. So here's his first counsel. You know, you want you to go back. You've done good so far. You've done well. I want you to stay with it. Don't give this up. Don't turn away from the Eternal God. The second counseling we see from Joshua is in chapter 23. And here he again warns. Chapter 23, beginning in verse 1. Now it came to pass after many days, when the Eternal had given rest to Israel from all their enemies on every side, that Joshua was old and advanced in years, that Joshua called all Israel, for their elders, their heads and their judges, their officers, he said to them, I'm old. I'm advanced in years. And you have seen all that the Eternal your God has done to all these nations because of you. God drove them out because of you. For Eternal your God has been fighting for you. You thought you did it yourself. I know you fought, you got lost some people, you won, but the Eternal your God has been fighting for you. See, I have apportioned to you these nations which remain as an inheritance for your tribes, with all the nations which I have cut off from the Jordan, even to the great sea, toward the setting of the sun, going all the, to the way to the west. The Lord your God, he will thrust them out from before you and drive them out from before you, and you will possess their land just as the Lord your God possessed you, promised you. Be very firm. Be very firm then to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, so that you may not turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left, so that you will not associate with these nations, these who remain among you, or mention the name of their gods, or make anyone swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them. But you are to cling to the Eternal your God as you have done this day. So again, another counseling by Joshua. This is what you've done. You've done so far so good. And he's going to thrust in. God has helped you. God has given us these victories. But you've got to be firm. You've got to stand for the commandments. You've got to stand God's way. And then we have Joshua chapter 24. And you see it beginning in, here's his last counsel to the people. Then Joshua said to the people, Joshua 24, dropping down to verse 19. Then Joshua said to the people, "You will not be able to serve the Eternal, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgression or your sins if you forsake the Eternal and serve foreign gods." Now, you can make a lot of mistakes with the true God. God is gracious, right? He's slow to anger. He's very merciful. He's forgiving. But you turn and you go to another God, bets are off, okay? No. You can't get forgiveness with God if you're going to worship Dagon or Molech or Chemosh or any of these others. He will not forgive your transgressions. If you forsake the Eternal and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after he has done good to you. He'll do good to you first, but now you're going to turn to other gods. He's going to consume you. The people said to Joshua, No, we're not going to do that. We're going to turn to another God, but we will serve Yahweh, the Eternal. Joshua said to the people, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen for yourselves the Eternal to serve him." And they said, "We are witnesses. We're going to lay it on the line. Now, therefore," Joshua now says, "put away the foreign gods which are in your midst and incline your hearts to the Eternal, the God of Israel." The people said to Joshua, "We will serve the Eternal our God and obey his voice." So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and made them a statute and an ordinance in a little town that we have heard so much about, at Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God. And he took a large stone, and he set it up under an oak tree that was by the sanctuary of the Eternal. And Joshua said to all the people, "Behold, the stone shall be for a witness against us, for it has heard all the words." This stone has heard all the words of the Eternal. It's interesting because another metaphor for God is the rock. He's the rock you just heard, the rock of our salvation. He's the rock of ages. He's the rock that stays with us all the time. This stone, I'm going to put this stone here. It's a witness against you, for it has heard all the words of the Eternal which he spoke to us, and thus it shall be a witness against you, so that you do not deny your God. Then Joshua dismissed the people, each one, each person, each tribe,
to its inheritance.
So it came about in verse 29. It came about after these things that Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Eternal. He was the son of Nun. I guess Nun would have been a very proud father. You know, Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Eternal, died, being 110 years old, verse 29. And they buried him in the territory of his inheritance in Timnath-serah, which is in the hill country of Ephraim, on the north side of Mount Gash. Israel served the Eternal all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua. Joshua was such an administrator, such a leader, such a person that can get those people. They were serving God. Listen to that phrase. They served God all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, and had known all the deeds of the Eternal which he had done for Israel. Now they buried the bones of Joseph, which the sons of Israel brought up from Egypt, at Shechem, and in the piece of ground which Jacob had bought for them in Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money. And they became the inheritance of Joseph's sons. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died, and they buried him at Gibeah. And Phinehas, his son, which was given him in the hill country of Ephraim. So Joshua died, an immense leader, an enormous person in the physical world, a man who served God. And what greater thing could it be said that Joshua, the servant of the Eternal, died? He fulfilled his commission. He fulfilled it. Our Joshua died, but rose again to be our living high priest forever and guiding us in the ways of righteousness even better. And with great forgiveness, we must never turn away from him.